Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts with the committee. My name is Kerry Sherman. Chris, I'm Kerry Sherman. That was Jay Rosenthal before. I'm a president of the Recording Industry Association of America. You've asked for input on the areas on which you should focus, so let me start with the economic background papers that you're planning to commission. First, I would urge the committee to ask more specifically, is a property right an important incentive to creation of works of authorship? That question is not clearly asked right now, and I think we need to answer it. If it turns out that the awarding of copyright rights in a work of authorship is an important reason why creators create, why amateur creators devote the thousands of hours of time and practice to become professional creators, why businesses devote the financial and human resources to subsidize and support the creators of the careers of professional creators, then that would suggest that we need to proceed very cautiously before we decide to limit the property right. It is intuitive to me that the copyright system has worked well to promote culture and creativity. The most vibrant creative communities appear to be found in countries with the most established copyright regimes. And a paper just published by OECD has concluded that generally strengthened frameworks for intellectual property rights in developing countries has delivered positive economic results. I would welcome research to prove or disprove my assumption. If I am right about the importance of copyright to creativity, then we'd need to think long and hard before changing that system in a way that could do more harm than good. Obviously, in addressing this question, we also need to think broadly about creativity and the kinds of creators we want to incent. A lot of that has already been discussed. There are lots of creators who will create purely for the sake of creating, but will they be any good at it? Will they devote the time and resources necessary to become better at it? Will they become professionals instead of amateurs? As exciting as the array of user-generated content online can be, we don't want a world of amateur creators only. We also want professionals who have put in the time, who have studied at educational institutions, who have learned from experience to earn their livelihoods from their creativity. It is telling that of all the content on YouTube, it is professionally produced music videos that are streamed the most by far. Another difficult question lurking in these studies is, what is the right measure of creativity? People have already been commenting on that as well. Surely we cannot rely on the simple number of creative works to serve as the measure of creativity. But how can we measure such attributes as quality? Do economists have the necessary tools to be able to do so? There were 97,000 record albums released in 2009. 81,000 of them sold less than 100 copies. That doesn't mean they weren't quality works, but for whatever reason, they did not command much interest or attention from the public. Do those works get counted the same as the much smaller number of very popular creative works that people actively seek out? Using the right measurement metrics will be critical. Perhaps it's that those 81,000 creators didn't have the human and financial resources of backers, like record labels or music publishers, to help market and promote their work so that the public would get to know it. The internet has enabled anyone and everyone to become her own publisher. But ironically, that has made it even more challenging to break through the clutter, to be heard. There are over 2 million artist pages on MySpace. How is any one of them going to get heard? Policies that encourage the creation of the best song in the world won't mean much if that song sits in a drawer heard by no one. This brings up another issue that I think needs to be considered in these papers. What is the incentive for businesses to support the creation, publication, and distribution of creative works? Creators benefit when businesses invest in them, and their fans benefit too, because businesses help creators produce the very best work they can. They provide professionals to offer advice and expertise. They give them the resources they need to spend their time honing their skills, and they provide the marketing support needed to launch creative works into the world. When businesses can't earn a return on their investment, they stop investing. Spain is an excellent example of this. Online piracy in Spain has so decimated the market there that record companies have substantially reduced their investment. In 2003, there were 10 new Spanish acts in the top 50 albums. In 2008, there was one. In 2009, there were none. Second, I would urge the committee to ask, is copyright a driver of technological innovation? Have you noticed the proliferation of new TVs offering 3D? This is not an accident. It's a direct result of Avatar, the most significant and successful 3D movie in history. It stimulated enormous interest in 3D content, which has generated more and more 3D movies, which in turn has driven technology companies to create technology and devices to broadcast and perform 3D content. If 3D content were to dry up tomorrow, would Panasonic and Samsung continue to develop 3D televisions? I don't think so. A third issue I would urge the committee to consider is the cultural benefit of copyright. I realize that the economic studies are intended to focus on economic values, but we should not overlook the importance of copyright's contribution to culture. Music is a defining cultural force in America. American culture defines us around the world. No matter where you go in the world, you will always hear American music playing much of the time. As long as we're attempting to measure other intangibles, let's not forget the intangible of culture that was one of the reasons for copyright in the first place. Finally, I will simply note the issue of piracy. As the proposal paper says, widespread digital piracy is a salient feature of the landscape of the current copyright marketplace. Measuring the extent and characteristics of this piracy seems to me to be an obvious element of any research agenda. Let me turn now to the list of salient issues in the STEP proposal. I was disappointed to see that almost all of the most salient issues were claims critical of copyright. I'm not going to urge you not to study these issues. They have become public policy issues, and they should therefore be analyzed. But it seems to me that the committee is focusing on just one side of a very complicated equation. We need to look not just at restrictions on property rights or the ability to enforce property rights, but on how to facilitate the licensing of property rights in the digital age. I'm reminded of the book Gridlock Economy by Andrew Heller, a professor at Columbia. He explains that airport congestion could be solved with the construction of 25 new runways. But building them has become almost impossible because of the welter of property rights in the areas adjoining airports. But is the takeaway, therefore, that we should prevent people from owning private property? That people should not be allowed to own land or homes? Of course not. The solution is to find a better way to clear the necessary rights to cut through legitimate property interests. Critics of copyright point to problems with the licensing of this property right in the digital age and suggest that the solution is to limit the scope of the right or to limit the ability to enforce it. The better approach, I believe, is to find improved ways to clear the necessary rights. I'll make three suggestions for areas worth further study. First, how can voluntary licensing systems be simplified to facilitate the clearing of rights in the digital age? It was not very long ago that licenses were essentially issued an album at a time, 12, maybe 15 songs at once. Now licenses are requested for literally millions of songs at a time. We've come a long way in the last decade, issuing licenses regularly for vast catalogs, but we can do better. For one thing, our laws do not distinguish between works of authorship created with the intention of controlling and profiting from them as compared with works created without any economic motivation or concerns. We need better ways to distinguish when copyright is a beneficial property right and when copyright is a meaningless and unwanted right. We also have not done a very good job in cataloging our copyrighted works and who owns them. It's difficult to clear rights when it's not even known who owns the rights. Can the government make copyright more transparent by ensuring that a repertoire database is created with current and accurate information necessary to make licensing simpler? There are certainly other improvements that can be made to licensing regimes in the music industry, and I don't mean more compulsory licenses. The government should not be determining the value of creative works, but there may be better ways to issue blanket licenses, for example. Second, how can copyright rights be clarified to eliminate ambiguity? Many of the problems we face are caused by our attempts to fit an old copyright law into a new digital environment. Copyright critics have often claimed that this ambiguity benefited copyright owners and stifled innovation. I submit that this uncertainty is actually benefiting copyright users and encouraging the wrong kind of innovation. Internet entrepreneurs are encouraged to create services that circumvent authors' rights and avoid royalty payments. Instead of accepting that creators must be paid for the use of their works, entrepreneurs look for the loopholes in existing law to find a way around the creator. This is bad public policy. We should make the law more clear and encourage innovators to offer the best experience for consumers, not the experience that avoids payments to creators. Finally, to what extent are antitrust laws inhibiting the ability of industries impacted by the internet to respond with game-changing business models? One of the realities of the music space is that any really new and innovative business model has to offer all the music, not the music of one company or two companies, but all of them. As a practical matter, new businesses can't launch successfully unless they've gotten all the major sources of content bought into the same business model. Unfortunately, antitrust restrictions prohibit the very communications that would make that more likely. Every company has its own ideas about how best to exploit its content, including how it should or should not be protected, what kinds of uses and copies and transfers consumers should be permitted to make with the content, and on and on. But those companies cannot talk to each other about these issues in an effort to get on the same page because they have been properly cautioned that such conversations could give rise to an antitrust violation. When Congress wanted to protect the family farm and also ensure a reliable supply of milk, they enacted legislation allowing dairy farmers to act collectively. The FTC has suggested that newspapers should be able to license their products jointly to help them adapt to the crushing impact of the Internet. Why not music? Shouldn't the industries most impacted by the Internet be given some leeway, carefully circumscribed to avoid price fixing and other clearly anti-competitive activities, to collaborate with each other and with licensees on new business models? Maybe there is some other industrial policy that can be envisaged that would facilitate the adoption and take-up of truly new and innovative business models, but right now, it's every company for itself trying to forge a new path while the law actually operates to impede rather than facilitate finding a common path. I'm going to give you a copy of my remarks in writing and a slightly longer version, so thank you very much for listening.
Great, thank you very much.
One question. I'm intrigued by the notion that facilitating the licenses of catalogs through repertoire databases that are transparent would enable the giving of blanket licenses and solving the sort of friction that occurs when internet companies have to march between all of the various different rights holders, and as a result of that, often walk away without acquiring what they're seeking. Can you suggest, for our purposes, any ways that we could look at other examples in other industries or in other territories where this has been done successfully, so that we can, from a fact-finding point of view, sort of point to the benefits of that sort of an outcome?
I don't know that I can point to any specific analogs, but probably the best example are the ASCAP and BMI databases. Everybody is able to license all the music collectively with comfort that they've got all the rights. Even though those are voluntary databases and membership in ASCAP and BMI is completely voluntary, the mere fact that a database exists, a mechanism exists for distribution to all the owners, has erased any friction in the marketplace in terms of being able to grant those kinds of licenses. Compare that with any other kind of reproduction licenses, for example, where there is no such all-inclusive database. Nobody feels any confidence in granting an all-industry license because there's no way to actually speak for the copyright owners or ensure distribution to all the copyright owners. I wish I could point to an analogy for that right elsewhere in the world, but I think that those are under development right now. I think everybody recognizes the need, but so far the databases haven't matched the need.
Mr. Sherman, so following up on that, and I'm intrigued by this licensing discussion, could you tell us, do you have an idea whether government action is needed to provide that kind of friction reduction in the licensing for reproduction, for example, or is this something that can be done purely by intermediaries like, an intermediary that looks like ASCAP or BMI?
I think the answer is both. I think the government can play a leadership role in terms of getting the ball rolling, bringing the parties together to help push everybody towards a solution. But it's probably best for the private sector to come in and actually create the database. There's nothing like the profit motive to create an efficient mechanism for offering these kinds of services, especially in the technology arena. So I think it's really a private-public sector partnership that is most likely to be successful.
Can I quickly link that what you just said to something you said earlier that I'm wondering about? You said you would like there to be a better way to separate out instances where the copyright actually has an economic value from instances where the copyright doesn't matter. So what were you thinking about when you mentioned that? So what could be done to do that?
Well, let me be very clear that I'm giving you a personal view on this. But I personally have come to the conclusion that the old system that we had before the Byrne legislation is probably more appropriate for the modern day than the current system, in which everything is copyrighted automatically. We should be returning to some system. I hesitate to call it formalities, and I realize that we would need to make this an international effort to make sure that the United States doesn't go out of compliance with international treaties in this area. But it makes sense for copyright people who want their copyrights to assert them. And we should give them lots of opportunities to do so to make sure people just don't get caught unawares and so on and so forth. But when you have a lot of amateur creators who aren't in the business of this, but suddenly have the same rights as a professional creator, it becomes more difficult to ensure that you're licensing properly, paying properly, and so on and so forth, because the law automatically treats everybody equally. It was a great idea at the time. It's not such a great idea right now.
Peter?
There are no established standard technical measures for tracking works and for dealing with these issues. That's something that the DMCA created an opportunity for development. Is that perceived as a mechanism that can and should be used to achieve some of these objectives?
I would love it to be. In order to create a standard technical measure, you need to have partners on the tech side or the ISP side as well as the content side. We haven't really found the tech ISP community very interested in agreeing on measures that would restrict the use of pipes for the free dissemination of all content. As a result, there's been nobody to negotiate standard technical measures with. I honestly believe that the world is changing in that respect. ISPs and other intermediaries are beginning to recognize that everybody has a responsibility to do something about the piracy problem. It has become so ruinous of the content industries that it is going to have profound effects for the future. So I think there's more of a willingness to consider things going forward. So maybe there's an opportunity. But I think that would be a wonderful area of study because the technologies are out there. It's just a matter of capturing them and putting them to effective use in a way that represents a balance between ownership and users.
One of the first questions you asked was the importance of property rights for our national economy and certainly for the community that you represent. A question that has come up has been whether there are alternatives to property that might give us the same cultural and economic benefits without some of the burdens and strife that it has generated. And one specifically is a liability rule where users don't ask for permission but pay a reasonable royalty rate. And I'm wondering, based on your comments, to what extent you think that research question is needed or valuable, or if your inquiry to the committee is more focused on exclusively looking at property rights as the major mechanism or the primary mechanism?
Well, we've had 200 years of experience with a property right, so it's an opportunity to see how much of an incentive it actually has created and whether it has fulfilled the purpose for which it was originally put into the Constitution. That should be done just to inform what we might lose if we change to another system. Changing to a liability system, for example, it becomes almost semantic because for those people who choose not to pay, and that's one of the issues with any kind of blanket system, exactly how do you force them to pay? I mean, we get back into user lawsuits. It's not a very attractive option. So the question is whether that really is an improvement over property rights. You also have the fact that you're having government valuation of creators' property, and that has a whole lot of issues associated with it. I'm all for studying everything. I'm not suggesting that should not be studied, but it actually has received a lot of attention, and there's been a lot of work done in that already, and that should certainly be looked at.
Great. Thank you very much.